Hi, my name is Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training, and today I'm going to give you an overview of the changes that are going to be taking place to international financial reporting standards in 2011. And the purpose of this podcast is to give you a basic introduction to the changes that are taking place and point you in the right direction so that you can go and do any further research that you need to. So, the key things that are taking place in international financial reporting this year are: there's going to be a change to the pensions standard, first of all. And secondly, there's going to be a change to the leasing standard. And there's going to be a change to the standard on provisions. And then a change to revenue recognition, how we recognise revenue. There are changes taking place in the way that we measure and disclose financial instruments. And those are the key changes that will be happening in the first half of the year, perhaps moving over into quarter three of this year. So I'm going to go through each of those, just spend a minute on each of those, just giving you a very quick overview of the key changes that are taking place, as I said earlier, so that you can go and look at them later on in more detail if they affect you or if you have an interest in them. Of those changes that I've pointed out, the ones with the largest impact in the general business world will be the leasing standard and the revenue recognition standard. And actually, we already know with the leasing standard that the time frame for that has already been pushed back a little, and maybe the standard will be coming out in the third quarter or perhaps even later in 2011. Okay, so let's start with having a quick look at pensions. There was an exposure draft issued in 2010 to update the pensions standard, the international standard on pensions. And the changes cover both presentation and calculation of charges in the income statement. It is due to be a standard in the mid part of this year. So the key changes that are taking place are on the return on plan assets income and the interest on plan liabilities charge. Now, before this proposal, both of those items would have appeared as part of the operating profit. So they would have appeared in operating expenses or income. The proposal is that both of these items now appear under interest. So the return on the plan assets would be a form of interest received, and the interest on the plan liabilities would be a form of interest charge. This is a parallel to the way we currently do it in the United Kingdom. So the international standard is moving into line with the UK standard there. And the other thing that's happening is that actuarial gains and losses, there was previously a choice of three different methods of dealing with actuarial gains and losses in the old standard. The proposal is that this is slimmed down to just one choice of treatment of actuarial gains and losses, and that is that those actuarial gains and losses would go through other comprehensive income. That was one of the previous three choices, but that's now going to be the only thing that you can do with actuarial gains and losses. And again, that brings it into line with the way that we do things in the United Kingdom. Those items are presentation items. The other thing that's going to change is the way that interest is going to be calculated. Previously, interest on plan assets and liabilities was calculated at different rates. The interest rate on plan liabilities would tend to be a lot lower than the amount of receipt on plan assets. And what their proposal is stating is that the rate of interest charged on plan liabilities should also be applied to plan assets. And this will have the impact for most organisations of reducing the amount of return on plan assets, because it will, for most organisations, be done in future at a lower rate. So those are the key changes taking place on pensions. Next, the leases. And leases is a key area of change. And what's happening with leases is that currently we have two forms of leasing: operating leases and finance leases. And of course, many organisations in the UK don't recognise any finance leases in their balance sheet, even where it would appear that those leases would fall within the definition of a finance lease. And the reason they do that is because they don't want the asset and corresponding liability on their balance sheet, because that increases their gearing and reduces their return on capital employed. The proposal is that all leases, with one exception, which I'll point out in a moment, that all leases should be capitalised. And that means an end to the distinction between operating lease and finance lease. any lease that we have would appear on our balance sheet, be capitalised on our balance sheet as an asset, and there would be a corresponding lease liability. The one exception to that is that leases that are less than 12 months will be accepted from the change. And those shorter leases of less than 12 months will be dealt with as an operating lease currently is, and that is that those lease payments will simply be charged to the income statement. That's the profit and loss account. I did mention earlier that this leasing standard is quite controversial and has caused the International Standards Board to meet a number of times in the early part of this year. And as a result of that, they've put the implementation back to later on in the year. It was supposed to happen in June, but that will be, I think, at the earliest in the third quarter of this year. Okay, so that's leases, a key standard and one that is taking a little bit more time than expected to be developed. The next change is on provisions, and the change here is that the name provisions will potentially disappear and these items will be known as non-financial liabilities. The other key changes are that, first of all, the outflow that is expected by the organisation no longer needs to be probable. Secondly, contingent items are no longer going to appear as disclosures in the accounts. And thirdly, that the expected value model is going to be used for measuring provisions or non-financial liabilities as they'll become known. So that means that, for example, perhaps we might have £1 million worth of warranty claims outstanding against us at the year end. Now, traditionally, what we would have done is we would have assessed the most likely level that we would settle at. So we might decide that the most probable level of payout would be £800,000 or £700,000 or whatever, and stick that figure in the accounts as our provision. The expected value model would use a slightly more mathematical technique, which would say, okay, what's the probability of us paying out the full million? It might be a very small probability, 10%. What's the probability of us paying out 700,000? That might be a 60% probability, and so on. And we'd multiply out the probabilities and come to our provision figure that way by multiplying out all the probabilities and adding them together using the expected values model. Okay, so they're the key changes on provisions, a different approach to actually calculating the provision and also a change of name. The next change that's going to take place is on revenue recognition. Now, alongside the leasing change, this is, I would say, the one of the two big ones that are going to take place this year. The revenue recognition model that's being adopted is quite different from our traditional revenue recognition model and has a five-step approach to recognising revenue. Now, the revenue recognition standard will change the way a lot of organisations measure revenue and will have particular impacts on organisations that carry out long-term contract work in progress, where traditionally we've had those organisations spreading the profits and the income from those long-term contracts over the period of the contract. Whereas moving forward under this new model, those organisations will perhaps have to wait until the contract is actually completed before they can recognise any revenue at all. So this is a very serious impact this standard will have on a number of organisations. So that's one well worth having a closer look at. Next, we have changes to the standards on financial instruments. Now, the financial instruments standards are in a state of flux at the moment. There is a three-stage project which is partly completed. First stage of the project was completed in 2009 and dealt with classification and measurement of financial instruments. The second stage of the project, which is ongoing, deals with amortised cost and impairment, and that is due to be published as a standard in the second quarter of 2011. The third part of the project was on hedging, the most complex part of the financial instrument standards, and that standard development is ongoing as we speak. They're the key changes that are taking place fairly immediately, but there will also be other changes coming out later in the year. We're expecting IFRS 10, which redefines what a subsidiary is and moves us, or will move us, towards a variable interest entity model for defining a subsidiary. This was just a very brief overview and summary of standards that you can expect in 2011. My name is Steve Carlisle from Clearly Training. Thank you for listening and goodbye.